1979, I received a copy of a massive document commissioned by the Club of Rome and written by Cyrus Vance. 3 days after, then-President James Earl Carter accepted it as official United States policy. At that time, Global 2000 was unknown outside of Committee of 300 circles and carefully chosen officials inside United States government circles. So I could justly claim to be the first private person to reveal in my World Intelligence Review the existence and content of this unbelievable blueprint for genocide on a global scale. I say unbelievable because at first sight it sounds like something from the pages of Dr. Moreau, almost as unbelievable as the involvement of the British royal family in the drug trade. Be that as it may, Global 2000 became part of the Committee of 300 plan to decimate the world's population by the year 2050, the first stage to be completed by the year 2000. Hence the title, Global 2000 Report. Although there are those who doubt its existence and purpose, nevertheless, it has become part and parcel of our daily lives, not only in America, but across the world. And even the title of the work is now being freely mentioned, albeit by some writers who have no real knowledge of its subject matter. The concept of too many ordinary people procreating and consuming too much of what the self-appointed Committee of 300 believes to be scarce, irreplaceable natural resources of the globe has exercised the feverish minds of the conspirators against God and man for centuries, attaining great importance in the 19th century through the thinking and writing of such notables as Jeremy Bentham, William Petty, the Earl of Shelburne, H.G. Wells, and Lord Bertrand Russell. Based upon a study of the Earth's resources and population growth, the, quote, Olympians, unquote, as they call themselves, decided to implement the recommendations of dealing with the problem of useless eaters. That again is a quotation made by Bentham, Petty, Wells, Russell, Harriman and his Eugenics Society. The Club of Rome was instructed to draw up a blueprint for the practical elimination of unwanted excess populations, which the Committee of 300 said was an emergency situation created by industrial expansion and the mechanizing of industry and agriculture. The work was given to the Tavistock Institute, who selected a member of the Council on Foreign Relations, the CFR, Cyrus Vance, and a team of 23 new scientists to produce the work, which was completed in 1978. The writings of Jeremy Bentham, H.G. Wells, and Bertrand Russell, Thomas Malthus, and Adam Smith are the foundation and the basis of Global 2000. Here is what Lord Bertrand Russell had to say about excess population. Quote, "But bad times, you may say, are exceptional and can be dealt with by exceptional methods. This has been more or less true during the honeymoon period of industrialism, but it will not remain true unless the increase in population can be enormously diminished. At present, the population of the world is increasing at the rate of about 50,000 per diem. War, so far, has had no great effect on this increase, which has continued throughout each of the world wars. War has hitherto been disappointing in this respect, but perhaps bacteriological war may prove to be more effective if a black death could spread through the world once in every generation, survivors could procreate freely without making the world too full. The state of affairs might be somewhat unpleasant, but what of it? Really high-minded people are indifferent to happiness, especially to other people's. Unquote. And this is taken from Bertrand Russell's book called The Impact of Science on Society. Bertrand Russell came from an aristocratic family, and as a certified aristocrat, he felt nothing but disdain for, quote, the lower classes, unquote, and even for H.G. Wells, a commoner. And yet the two men saw eye to eye on most matters of substance and frequently met at the Coefficients Club for discussions on issues of world import. The Coefficients Club was where English gentlemen, politicians and prime ministers met. It was Russell and Wells who first gave concrete expression to the one world government, New World Order, which Wells called, and I quote, the New Republic, unquote. Bertrand Russell received his formal education at Trinity College, Cambridge, so that coming from the stronghold of English snobbery, Russell and Wells regarded the vast majority of people as stupid. It was difficult, and it is even more difficult today, for the greater educated group of Americans to understand, appreciate, and believe that Bentham, William Petty, Russell, and Wells spent their entire adult lives planning to return the world to another round of the Dark Ages, from which they hoped it would never again emerge. Russell's contempt for the common people was expressed in his book, The Problems with China, in which he openly shows his disdain for Russian peasants. Describing his trip down the Volga in the summer of 1920, Russell let all of his prejudices against ordinary folk be known. Quote, I realize how profound is the disease in our Western mentality, which the Bolsheviks are attempting to force upon an essentially Asiatic race. And in parenthesis, let me add, Russell had not done his homework too well in this regard. One night, very late, our boat stopped in a desolate spot. In silence, I went ashore and found a strange assemblage of human beings, half nomads, wandering from some remote region of famine. The flickering flames lighted up gnarled, bearded faces of wild men, strong, patient, primitive women, and children, as sedate and slow as their parents. Human beings they undoubtedly were, yet it would have been far easier to grow intimate with a dog or a cat or a horse than with one of them. Unquote. Russell was also well known for putting down people, and his comments about Beatrice and Sidney Webb, generally regarded as the founders of Fabianism, is a case in point. Beatrice Webb was the daughter of a railroad magnate who got his seed money from one of the British Rothschilds, while Sidney Webb was a professional civil servant. To quote what Russell had to say about them, Webb was originally a second division clerk in the civil service, but immense industry succeeded in rising to the first division. He was somewhat earnest and did not like jokes about sacred subjects such as political theory. On one occasion, I remarked to him that democracy has at least one merit, namely, that a member of parliament cannot be stupider than his constituents, for the more stupid he is, the more stupid they were to elect him. Unquote. Russell, Wells, and before them Bentham, Ruskin, Adam Smith, and Thomas Malthus often expressed their hatred of industrial progress. For them, the world should have remained a feudalistic state, ruled over by the few, the Olympians. But for the monster of industrialism, in his book, The Prospects for Industrial Civilization, Russell stated as follows, quote, the decay of individual passions brings with it, first of all, a diminution of individuality. In a thoroughly industrialized community, such as the United States is, there is little appreciable difference between one person and another, a lunatic who kills his wife with every circumstance of horror, is a public benefactor, since he livens things up, unquote. Wells severely criticized Lenin for trying to put in an electrification system for Russia. His contempt for the Russian people matched that of his colleague, Bertrand Russell, who earlier advocated a policy which called for a devastating nuclear first strike against the Russian people and not so much against Bolshevism. In his book, The Impact of Science on Society, Russell expounded his views on how the world's population ought to be controlled so as not to become a threat to the privileged rulers, those described by Ruskin as, and I quote, medieval aristocracy, unquote, and of whom Russell approved as being highly desirable. To continue the quote, the present urban and industrial centers have become derelict. Their inhabitants, if still alive, will have reverted to the peasant hardships of their ancestors. End of quote. We saw this policy in action in Cambodia, whose Pol Pot regime is an ally of the United States government, and in fact, under whose permissiveness, and some would say actual direction, almost 2 million of Phnom Penh's city dwellers were murdered. H.G. Wells expressed his hatred and contempt of ordinary people, whom he felt no effort or no time should be spent or spared. Wells despised these people, these ordinary people as he called them, who had embraced industrialism as a means to a better life for themselves. And this is clearly expressed in his 1937 book, The Croquet Players. And this is what he had to say. Man is still what he was. Invincible, bestial, devious, malicious, greedy. Man, sir, unmasked and disillusioned, is the same snarling beast he was 100,000 years ago. Then, boasted by his aristocratic friend Bertrand Russell, Wells wrote his infamous Open Conspiracy. In praise of his colleague's work, Russell wrote, and I quote, I do not know of anything with which I agree more entirely. End of Russell's quote. In Open Conspiracy, we see the true nature of these two evil men who accused ordinary man of being beyond the pale. And this is what H.G. Wells went on to say. The men of the new republic, and that's the one world government, New World Order, by the way, under another name, will not be squeamish either in facing or inflicting death. They will have an ideal that will make killing worthwhile. Like Abraham, they will have the faith to kill. And they will have no superstition about death. They will hold, I anticipate, that a certain portion of the population exists only on sufferance and out of pity and patience and on the understanding that they do not propagate. And I do not see any reason to suppose that they will not hesitate to kill when that sufferance is abused. All such killings will be done with an opiate. If deterrent punishments are used at all in the code of the future, the deterrent will neither be death or mutilation of the body, but good, scientifically caused pain. End of the quote from H.G. Wells' book, The Open Conspiracy. Wells and Russell continued to cooperate right up to the Second World War. In preparing the, quote, medieval aristocracy, unquote, for war with Germany, Wells wrote a book called The Shape of Things to Come. And here is an extract from that book. The attacks came in the best style without a declaration of war. The first line of advance consisted of a variety of influenza, impoverishing fevers that were highly infectious and impossible to control under war conditions. The depleted strength of the belligerent populations, a depletion due to their reduced and disorganized nourishment and the collapse of their sanitary services, gave these infections full scope. They killed some millions and diminished the already lowered vitality of the great populations even further. The lowering of the vitality was far more important than actual mortality. Cholera and bubonic plague followed. And then, 5 years later, when the worst seemed to be past, came the culmination attack by maculated fever. Unquote. In parentheses, let me add that bubonic plague was a maculated fever in that it spotted and marked the skin. So no doubt this is what Wells was inferring. To continue with the quote, the immediate cause of the world collapse in the 20th century were first, monetary inadaptability, secondly, disorganization of society through increased productivity, and please note that, and thirdly, the Great Pestilence, unquote. In the foregoing scenario, Wells predicted events that occurred exactly in this manner before World War I and after World War II. Most of what has happened in our world since the 1900s is contained in Wells' prediction, which may not have been entirely of his own. Certainly no one can deny that Wells was speaking of the coming of the Federal Reserve Board and the great Spanish flu epidemic, which swept the world in 1919 and took more lives than the combined losses of the belligerents in the First World War. As yet, there is no conclusive proof that the Spanish flu epidemic did not arise from natural causes. My own belief is that it was an early experiment to rid the world of enough unwanted people, which the just-ended war had failed to do. This belief of mine was strengthened when I was refused access to documents at the British War Office in London, which dealt with this subject. After the Second World War, we see Wells's hatred of industrialism being expressed in the Club of Rome's post-industrial zero-growth blueprint for the destruction of industrialism in the United States, which remains the curse of America and the root cause of the Great Depression of 1992-1995. Alongside the policies of the Federal Reserve Board, we are also witnessing the great plagues of 1987-2000 in the form of AIDS, herpes, cholera, smallpox, tuberculosis. A most terrible epidemic of virulent herpes is sweeping America, while a new and deadly strain of the cholera virus, first unleashed in Peru, has now swept through Mexico and sits on our borders. AIDS, as we know, is an artificially induced virus which in effect is a cancer of the blood. The first AIDS experiments were conducted in Africa on the border of Sierra Leone and Nigeria. I myself was given advance notice that an experiment using the Lassa fever virus was about to be conducted on black patients at a remote Christian mission hospital. I gave a full description of this deadly affair in my 1979 monograph, The Truth About AIDS. This pioneering work was written long before the full horror of the coming AIDS plague surfaced, and when few people, even in the medical profession, knew anything about it. Lassa fever viruses were chosen for the experiment because they are one of the four known viruses that have made the leap from animal to man. The Truth About AIDS, written after I had made a dangerous on-the-spot investigation in Sierra Leone, is still available for those who may care to order it. Finally, Wells described the coming war, when chemical and bacteriological weapons will be used. Always the prime mover, Russell co-opted Wells to form the Society of Friends and the Fellowship of Reconciliation, both designed to trap the unwary and mislead them with New World Order, One World Government propaganda. One of those picked and carefully profiled by the Russell networks in the United States was Jim Jones. Russell's Fellowship of Reconciliation proved attractive to him. The fellowship funded Jones to go to Butler College and then packed him off to Brazil to study native cult practices for possible use in the future in America, which of course we know Jim Jones used to deadly telling effect. That Bertrand Russell was a man who played God can be seen in the legacy he left the world, the Club of Rome, Global 2000, post-industrial zero growth, plagues like AIDS, herpes, and cholera, and ongoing rule by a group of, quote, medieval aristocrats, unquote, and their servants who call themselves the Committee of 300, whose policies closely resemble those of Lord Bertrand Russell and his protege, H.G. Wells. In his manifesto for a one-world government, New World Order, Wells emphasized the need for the practical necessity for world biological control, for example, of population and disease. Now, that's a direct quote from the work of Wells. The Global 2000 report implementing what Wells proposed, namely the world that is overpopulated with too many redundant people, must not be allowed to procreate and consume scarce natural resources. Wells drew liberally on the writings of Jeremy Bentham, creator of the Paris mobs of the French Revolution. Bentham lived at the sumptuous home of William Petty, the Earl of Shelburne, from where the two of them ran the day-to-day operations of Danton and Marat, their former pupils. In 1780, Bentham wrote, and the work is titled, An Introduction to the Principles and Morals of Legislation, which amounted to a justification of the Jacobin terror he and Petty had unleashed on the people of France. Bentham was a Satanist, a member of the Medmahan Church, which was a Gnostic Bogomil Cathar practicing club, from which sprang the Hell's Fire Clubs of London, to which hundreds of Victorian, quote, noble gentlemen, unquote, belonged. As I point out in many of my works, the Cathars and the Bogomils were the originators of homosexuality, lesbianism, and abortion. In 1780, Bentham wrote An Introduction to the Principles and Morals of Legislation. And this work, I want to tell you, ladies and gentlemen, is truly an abomination. Bentham openly worked for legalizing drugs, and in 1782 supported homosexuality on the basis that man procreates far too much and should not therefore be restricted to female partners in the sexual act. Bentham practiced buggery and even wrote that he favored it. All through his life, Bentham expressed anger and outrage that, quote, common people, unquote, were allowed to procreate freely, advocating that procreation among the ordinary people be curbed by strict, ruthlessly applied laws. Bentham can claim the unenviable distinction of being the first to propose that jobless people be confined in concentration camps run by a joint stock company for profit. He also proposed the same treatment for convicted criminals, although he did say that they should be segregated from people whose only crime was not being able to find a job. Bentham even designed a building which could serve as a workplace inside the camp with accommodation of the most primitive kind. Once committed to concentration camps, inmates would never leave there alive. We would be foolish to think that our secret government does not have plans which resemble Bentham's cost-effective concentration camp production units. Reading through the Global 2000 report soon convinced me that the United States government would not hesitate to embark on something similar to Bentham's proposals for solving the crisis of unemployment and overpopulation. Report of the Special Committee on the Termination of National Emergency, United States Senate Report 93-549 of November 1973, 93rd Congress, makes it clear that the United States is being ruled under a state of emergency which has never been rescinded. Under the state of emergency, President Bush has demonstrated that he is capable of some bestial actions, and I, for one, would take a lot of convincing before I would believe that work concentration camps incorporated could not spring up in the United States. The Global 2000 report does nothing to dispel such a possibility. On the contrary, it encourages the idea. Bentham, Shelburne, Wells, and Russell hated the idea of education for the masses. Their idea was to keep feudal-style systems in operation that would allow people to have a vocabulary of no more than 500 words. This is inherent in Global 2000 and might help to explain why Alexander King of the Club of Rome was commissioned to destroy education in America, a plan which is entering the last stages of complete success as we enter 1992. A destructed education system qualifying millions who can barely read and write and who speak an argot somewhat resembling English will ensure a society in which the majority can and will be easily manipulated by men like President Bush, Cyrus Vance, Lord Carrington, and James Baker III. Global 2000 is like most secret society documents in that they have a common characteristic of pretending to be for the good of mankind, having a mixture of theology, psychology, economics, and politics. This mix is characteristic of the work of Thomas Kuhn. The common objective is the overthrow of Christianity and the ushering in of a one world government, new world order. This is the background of Global 2000. Much of what passes for theology is Gnosticism, and to get a proper perspective on the evil rituals of Gnosticism, one must read the work of Saint Epiphanius, who said Gnostics are sorcerers and did not shrink from describing them. And I quote some of what he said about the subject. "Speaking thus, I hope to fill you with horror of the turpitude they commit," unquote. Queen Elizabeth II of England is a Gnostic, which is not all that surprising, given the fact that her antecedents are of the Black Guelphs of Venice. The House of Windsor was a title name invented by King George V in 1936 as a cover story. So you see, there is no House of Windsor. Global 2000 draws on the precepts of the secret societies of Coprocrates and Eucrites, as did Bentham, who tried to justify wholesale slaughter that occurred during the French Revolution. The Eucrites played a major role in the Bolshevik Revolution and the attempts to communize Spain, all of which resulted in a great loss of human life. Indeed, it was as planned. These secret societies have not disappeared. They still operate today, but few even know of their existence. The First and Second World Wars were wars designed to kill millions of people, but were not successful enough. Hence, the new methods outlined in the Global 2000 report. Count Richard Coudenhove Kalergi was another member of the black nobility upon whom the authors of Global 2000 drew heavily, in particular from his book Revolution Through Technology, which was supportive of Ruskin's ideas of medieval aristocracy. To quote from that work, "The social bondage of mankind reaches its peak in the modern large city, for here the pressures and overpopulation are the most oppressive. The social pressures of the countryside are somewhat less oppressive than in the cities, and they are least oppressive in thinly populated countries such as Greenland and Saudi Arabia. Therefore, there are still some remnants of personal freedom. The road to ethical anarchy leads through governmental coercion, and the road through technical leisure leads through forced labor. One of the greatest missions of technology is the liberation of mankind from the labyrinth of large cities. Technology and industry will destroy it again. In its facilities, the city of the future will resemble the city of the Middle Ages. And he who is not condemned to live in the city will go to the countryside. Our civilization is a culture, a marsh plant, born by degenerated, sickly and decadent people who have voluntarily or involuntarily ended up in this dead-end street of life." Unquote. Coudenhove Kalergi bemoaned the fate of European aristocracy, and I quote again from his work, "The tragedy of the European situation lies in the fact that it possesses no aristocracy that could carry an authority. A return to the nobility of blood is impossible." End of quote. He called for healthy human beings whose instincts are not troubled by artificial moral systems and whose conscience is not poisoned by a sick life. What then does the Global 2000 report allegedly address?
basically it lays down a premise that the mechanism of agriculture and the industrialization of the world was a terrible mistake. Bad because it led to and presently supports a mass of people who perform no indispensable service and who are consuming the limited resources and destroying the environment of the globe, their globe, which they, that is the Committee of 300, representing the, quote, preordained leaders, unquote, of the world, say is theirs. Therefore, the remedy, they say, lies in destroying an economy based upon agricultural and industrial expansion, because these support larger and larger populations of unwanted, quote, useless eaters, unquote. As such a premise flies in the face of Christianity, such Christianity as therefore to be phased out and replaced with occultism and cultism, which if we look back to the 1950s, when the onslaught against Christianity really began in earnest, is precisely what has transpired. Thus, the plotters reasoned, with no moral opposition to mass genocide, it will be easier to carry out than if Britain and the United States, for example, remained staunchly Christian, although not perceived as such. Aborticide remained a staunchly anti-Christian part of Global 2000 planning. What truly moral nation, based upon the teachings of the incomparable Christ, would permit the murder of 15 million children and then claim it as a, quote, right, unquote, to do such a ghastly deed? In the light of the foregoing explanation, it must be perfectly clear to all reasonable people that aborticide, infanticide, the mass murder of children, is part of the Global 2000 plan to rid the world of what it deems to be excessive population. Anyone willing to take part in aborticide has therefore aligned himself or herself with the Global 2000 report. Let there be absolutely no error here. As I have said earlier, the Bogomils and the Cathars were the ones who introduced abortion into the world, which is why they were persecuted by the Catholic Church. Much of the Inquisition was not directed against the Marano Jews, but against the Cathars, who were spreading this disease of abortion and homosexuality across the length and breadth of Europe, and whom the Church quite rightly saw as an ever-present danger to the order of things as ordained by Almighty God. Abortion is not a Christian doctrine. Abortion is a Cathari doctrine, a doctrine which has its origins in demon worship and devil worship. And I don't care how broad-minded anybody thinks they are, broad-mindedness does not stretch to allow for the murder of unborn children. And the quicker we in the United States realize this and put an end to the mass murder of children, the quicker will this country be able to turn itself around and once again take its place as the greatest nation in the world. Thus, the battle is not only physical, but very much a spiritual battle, And on the physical side, of course, the United States of America has got to go back to industrialism and mechanized agriculture. We have to have an industrial-based economy. If we do not, we cannot survive, because America was meant to be an industrialized nation. The fact that we've been robbed of our ability to carry on and expand our industries is part of the evil plot of the Global 2000, which was directed against us in the 1950s, and which is still very much ongoing today. And unless this is addressed by the candidates for political office, we shall never see the economy turn around. In fact, as I've often predicted, I do not see the United States economy turning around until the year 1995 or 1996. We are indeed in the depths of a deep, deep depression brought on by the destruction, the willful and deliberate destruction of our industrial base and our mechanized agriculture. At this point, please turn your tape over for a continuation of the program. Today, the slaking of the thirst of lust is by and large a preeminent goal of Americans. It is in this climate that unborn children are regarded as merely an expendable byproduct of unbridled lust, which pays no attention and no regard to the moral truth of what it takes for a republic such as ours to survive. The Global 2000 report capitalizes on this artificially created public opinion that life isn't particularly valuable, which is the attitude that allowed President George Bush to get away with a heinous crime of burying 12,000 Iraqi soldiers alive, a vile, bestial act which aroused nothing more than a distant murmur of protest. What an indictment against the United States. Today, as we go deeper and deeper into the Great Depression of 1990-1995, few voices are raised to question why this should be. Why is this once great country lying in a slough of economic depression? Where is all the money? Has it just disappeared, or been burnt, or what? Don't we have a well-trained workforce capable of doing great things? What then doth hinder us? The Global 2000 report tells the whole story and answers these puzzling questions. Following the Club of Rome's post-industrial zero-growth blueprint, the United States has had its industrial base sabotaged and torn down, starting with the steel industry and closely followed by the auto and housing industries. This is the real cause of the depression, which has thus far created 30 million unemployed Americans and left millions homeless. This tragedy is not caused by any economic reason. It is caused by the Committee of 300 setting out to deliberately deindustrialize America, the quote surplus population unquote thus created is targeted for death as useless eaters, in terms so clearly expressed in the Global 2000 report. This is not the expression of unreality experienced by Dr. Moreau's patients, who were heavily drugged with hashish so that he could study their hallucinations, but the reality of a carefully constructed conspiracy that is already so far advanced as to be unstoppable. Unless we can awaken this nation as to what is happening before our very eyes. There are many aspects of Global 2000 that are being worked on by a variety of institutions similar to the Aspen Institute for Humanistic Studies. The power of the conspirators who plan to depopulate the world should not be underestimated, nor their determination to carry out their plans. Read what Harlan Cleveland, one of the earlier founder members of the Club of Rome, had to say about the coming One World Government, New World Order. Quote, "There is a long agenda of creative effort just ahead of us, a complex agenda of international action, which some of us have been calling the planetary bargain. We, the people of the world community, will need to create a food reserve to assure energy supplies, to depress fertility rates, to stabilize commodity markets and to protect global environment, to manage to reform the monetary system. Taking it all together, this agenda amounts to a third try at world order. The League of Nations having died, and the United Nations unable in its present condition to cope." End of the statement made by Mr. Harlan Cleveland, a most important member of the Club of Rome. As is usual with this pronouncement or pronouncements of this kind, there is just enough in it to make us believe in a noble cause, only to wake up one morning and find ourselves enslaved in a one world government, new world order, from which there is no escape. That is what Global 2000 offers us, the middle class, swept away and made impossible to exist. What will be left will be a super poor class of slaves and a super rich class of rulers, themselves ruled by an elite body called the Committee of 300. As long as we, the super poor, behave ourselves and do not procreate too freely, we will be allowed to exist. As for the majority of the colored races, they will be swept away off the face of the earth by deadly plagues, many artificially created and targeted genetically at their physical weaknesses, so that they will not be able to withstand even the common cold. It is all there, ladies and gentlemen, in the pages of Global 2000. Of course, it doesn't mention the colored and the black races per se, but with a little bit of reading between the lines, the intent to eliminate the bulk of these races does become clear. Clearly, the planned death of the American dream of constant material progress was ushered in with the founding of the Club of Rome that commissioned the Global 2000 report. Now, I'd like to point out that Global 2000 sets goals. It is not just some hopeful, far-distant nightmare which it expounds. On the contrary, it says in plain language, by the year 2000, the world shall have rid itself of at least 100 million useless eaters. And by the year 2050, the number culled shall amount to not less than 400 million people. How will this be accomplished? Read again the words of Bertrand Russell and H.G. Wells, and see again the Khmer Rouge in action in Cambodia. By the year 2000, the number of full-blown cases of AIDS in America will have reached 10 million, with millions more dying of AIDS-related diseases like tuberculosis, meningitis, cholera, and more than likely from bubonic plague. These events were planned, and they are ongoing. believing them or not does not make the slightest difference to the facts. Because not much is said about AIDS, other than the number of fully blown cases, we in the United States have not yet come to fully realize what has hit us. But by the year 2000, we will have come to the full knowledge of the hows and the whys of AIDS. But by then it will be too late. Regional, quote, limited wars, unquote, using chemical and bacteriological weapons of mass destruction will also take a huge toll of human life. There will be no civilians in these wars, only the enemy, who will suffer violent attack, such as was dealt to the people of Iraq. Iraq, ladies and gentlemen, was in fact a test case. India and Pakistan are already being set up for a major war, which will eliminate a few million on either side. Africa has already been decimated by plagues and famine. The number of deaths in Ethiopia, Eritrea, Somaliland, Kenya, and Uganda runs into 25 million people, according to the unofficial World Health Organization, WHO figures. This is only the beginning. As the economies of the third world countries continue in a depression, more and more people, weakened by famine, will fall prey to plagues of one kind and another. We are seeing it in Africa today. Tomorrow we shall see it all over the world. As I said earlier, whether you believe this or not does not detract one iota from the fact these things are ongoing and they are going to get a lot worse because they were planned that way. If we do not want to believe what the Committee of 300 believes, that is to say, man is an enemy of the planet, then read what the Club of Rome founder member, Aurelio Pecci, wrote on the subject, and I will quote. For the first time since the millennium was approached in Christendom, large masses of people are really in suspense about the impending advent of something unknown, which could change their collective fate entirely. Pecci goes on to say that animals know how to be animals, but that only man is vile. Now, they, that is the animals, are in danger because their deadliest enemy, the enemy tyrant of most forms of life, man, moves ever more against them. Man invented the story of the bad dragon. But if ever there was a bad dragon on earth, it is man himself. Since man opened the Pandora box of new technology, and there is the key, ladies and gentlemen. Everything these people write is against technology and against industry. To repeat, since man opened the Pandora box of new technology, he has suffered uncontrollable human proliferation, the mania for growth, energy crises, actual or potential, resource scarcity, degradation of the environment, nuclear folly, and countless other afflictions. Quote, to which I would add, surely then, this dangerous enemy, this man, must be held in check, and that is precisely what the Global 2000 report recommends, and is in fact in the process of carrying out. The Mesorovic and Pestel project labeled man as a cancer on the world. The 1976 Global 2000 report forerunner called Resource Shaping an International Order was published by the Club of Rome and carried an article under the heading, quote, Mankind at the Turning Point, unquote. Mesorovic and Pestel, who wrote it, and called it a master plan to lead to the creation of a new mankind. The work started with these words, and please note carefully, quote, "The world has cancer, and the cancer is man," unquote. Global 2000 was written strictly with this premise as the basis of its conclusion that millions upon millions of human beings must be ruthlessly culled by the end of the year 2050. Global 2000 used, quote, "mankind at the turning point," unquote, to claim that a new strategy to redistribute natural resources was absolutely vital. It also attacked consumerism in America and called it greedy, and that Americans were unwilling to make sacrifices of any kind. The Global 2000 recommended that out-of-theater NATO forces be used to bring the third world countries into line with its, quote, "new economic policies," unquote. Again, Global 2000 borrowed extensively from Harlan Cleveland's Atlantic Council report, which mandated a world body taking control of the natural resources of all nations. And that means the United States too. Some people think we're going to escape from all these things. Not at all. We may not be as hard hit as some of the African countries, but we are not going to escape the judgment of the Global 2000. The Atlantic Council mandated a world body to take control of natural resources of all nations and to advise third world nations to decide, and I'll tell you this as a quotation, to decide democratically among yourselves which populations would be eliminated, unquote. I don't know if I could put it any more plainly than that. By now, those doubting Thomases should know that this is more than just a mere figment of imagination. Global 2000 quotes Aurelio Pecci's solution to overpopulation, quote, "Damaged by conflicting policies of the major countries and blocs, roughly patched up here and there, the existing international economic order is visibly coming apart at the seams. The prospects of the necessity of recourse to triage, deciding who must be saved, is a very grim one indeed. But if, lamentably, events should come to such a pass, the right to make such decisions cannot be left to just a few nations, because it would lend them ominous powers over the life of the world's hungry." Pecci, I might remind you again, was the founder of the Club of Rome. And what Pecci and Global 2000 said must be done is give a central organization, the One World Government, New World Order, quote, "ominous powers over the life of the world's hungry," unquote. We have seen just how this worked in Somalia, Eritrea, and Ethiopia. We shall see just how Global 2000 powers unfold in other areas of Africa, especially South Africa, once the African National Congress, the ANC, gains control with the connivance and the knavery and treason of Washington. Then we shall witness starvation stalk the land alongside AIDS, which will carry away millions upon millions of blacks in South Africa, where famine and plagues have never hitherto been experienced. Like Pol Pot, Mandela will have no compunction in obeying Committee of 300 orders to implement mass genocide of black useless eaters. Global 2000 has been accepted by Canada, the United States, Spain, Belgium, Australia, Holland, Luxembourg, Britain, France, and latterly by South Africa. Official White House documents during the President Carter's tenure recommended acceptance of the Club of Rome's Global 2000 policies. that should guide decision making in the future. One particular White House document headed Trends for the 80s said that the United States economy was shifting out of its industrial phase into what it called an information economy. This was the green light for the destruction of our industrial base, and it was started during the tenure of President Carter. Herein were grown and nurtured the viruses that have attacked and killed the American dream by going for the jugular, the American middle class, unique in the history of the world and made possible by the mechanization of agriculture and a giant leap forward of industrialism. Man, and I'm using that as a quote, especially United States middle class man, was the cancer. By destroying our industrial and agricultural development, the conspirators brought the middle class of America low, destroyed it. This is the stage we are at in 1992. With our economy well into a pre-planned depression, with not a single politician on the horizon willing to call it a depression. It is not a recession, ladies and gentlemen. It is a full-blown depression. Before it is over in 1995, 1996, millions upon millions of Americans will have become, quote, useless eaters, unquote, consigned to the scrap heap to be disposed of in the most convenient manner. Are these strong words? Indeed they are, but they are words which must be spoken. We cannot keep silent in the face of such present danger. Nor should we fool ourselves into believing, well, it can't happen here. This is America. President Bush has shown that the kind of America we once knew has vanished. President Bush thought nothing of going into Panama, kidnapping a head of state and killing 7,000 civilians who were unfortunate enough to get in the way of Operation Just Cause. Nor did he hesitate to slaughter thousands of Iranian soldiers, deliberately not allowing them to surrender, while our forces bombarded and destroyed the civilian infrastructure of Iraq. Are we so foolish as to believe that there is not another Thomas Enders to be found in today's America? Some of us might not know the name of Thomas Enders, so let me give you what you need to know. Thomas Enders was a high-level State Department official who oversaw the slaughter of an estimated 2 million Cambodians by the Khmer Rouge as the first practical test of how this kind of mass murder could be carried out and gotten away with. Do we foolishly think, as brainwashed as we are, that there are not some in the power structure who would order NATO forces and our United Nations forces drawn from the Philippines, Nicaragua, Nigeria, Saudi Arabia, India and China to fire upon American civilians who are not prepared to accept the rule of a new world order? If there are some among us who still cling to the memory of America as it was in the 1950s, let them read Global 2000. There are so many reports in existence beside Global 2000 which clearly spell out for us the America of the year 2000 and onwards. But unless we bestir ourselves and look for them, we will remain in ignorance, because we will not find the kind of information I am talking about in the prostituted news media of the Western world. Global 2000 and the New World Order, for which it stands, plan fundamental societal changes for man. Parts of Global 2000 bear a close resemblance to the work of Lewis Mumford, entitled Transformation of Man, written in 1956. Mumford argued that some changes are taking place all the time, but that there seems to be a particular period in history where society has gone through fundamental changes. Mumford states that there have been five or six such severe changes in world history, the most recent being the end of the Middle Ages. This is significant because what the New World Order is in the closing stages of doing is to return the world to a new dark age. Every society ever known rests on the same basic assumptions about who we are, what kind of a world we are in, and what is ultimately important to us. Some such sets of assumptions are found underlying the institutions, mores, patterns of thought, and value systems that characterize society. These are seldom in written or formalized form, simply because they are absorbed in the memory pattern of each newborn in much the same way as a puppy pointer can instinctively go out and raise quail in a field. John Rawlings Rees, founder of the Tavistock Institute and master brainwasher of the world, recognized these truths in 1921 and set out to make his observations work on a global scale. He was commissioned to do this by the Royal Institute for International Affairs. The full account of Tavistock can be found in two works which I did on the subject back in 1985, and they are still available. Beginning in 1946, the United States was targeted by Tavistock to forcibly change our perceptions and values. The results of that successful war on us are clearly visible on all sides. Tavistock Institute for Human Relations borrowed from Thomas Kuhn's The Structure of Scientific Revolution, particularly by using his term paradigm change when referring to societal transformations such as we have undergone, very much against the will of the majority. Examples of cultural paradigm shifts are acceptance of homosexuality and lesbianism, pornography, disgustingly degraded music, the so-called rock music, modern art, degradation of education, infanticide, also called aborticide, rampant divorce, disrespect for religious institutions. In the political arena, we have allowed tampering with our priceless constitution, permitted our president to break both domestic and international laws and treaties, examples of which are the invasion of Panama, the war on Iraq, pressure groups known as lobbyists who changed the direction of Congress on many vital issues. Tavistock called this tampering with the minds on a mass scale as the basic way of perceiving, thinking, valuing, and doing associated with a particular view of reality. End of the quote from the Tavistock training manual, which I have in my possession. In other words, ladies and gentlemen, we as a nation have been forced to accept changes. Forced to accept changes that will eventually rot our souls if they have not already done so. The acceptance of the Global 2000 report by President James Earl Carter marked the turning paradigm shift away from the thoroughly decent society that America was up until the 1950s. The idea that vile things cannot happen in America simply because we are Americans must be dispensed with if we want our nation back. It was beyond the capabilities of any of us to forecast the consequences of such demonically inspired shifts, but the conspirators always knew what they would be. Most of us did not even realize that profound changes were being forced upon us. So how could we resist them? But now that some of us have taken years of our time to investigate these shifts, there is no excuse for us to remain in ignorance. The cause and effect of such profound changes have been fully identified. We are now in a position to see the enemy engaged in war with the American nation, and therefore the time has arrived for us to arm ourselves with the knowledge that is available and put up the struggle of our lives to turn this nation away from the very brink of total disaster. From the very brink, total disaster, these sound like very theatrical words. And that is because the mind benders, the opinion makers, the poll takers want you to think in this way. No, these are not theatrical words. These words represent the reality of a truly dangerous era for the United States of America. It was the hallmark of the mind benders of the 1950s, the Club of Rome, the North Atlantic Treaty Organization, the Tavistock Institute, and the hundreds of institutions and foundations engaged in war on the American people, that the study of our consciousness was reduced to examination of behavior. These behavioral scientists, as they like to call themselves, then set to work to modify our behavior to make us more amenable to changes we did not understand and much less desire, as part of the process of herding us into a one world government, new world order. Global 2000 is part and parcel of the structure of behavior modifications. In the space of this message, it is indeed impossible for me to go into every aspect of modifications of behavior, the so-called behavioral sciences, but I have done extensive research into this subject, and that research can be found in my work on Global 2000, on the Club of Rome, on many of the secret societies, but particularly it can be found in my work on the Tavistock Institute, which took many, many years to complete, in which work I carefully explain how these things work, how we are so manipulated that we have got the idea that the opinions we have are our own, whereas, in actual fact, these opinions have been manufactured for us. If you wish to get the monographs on the Tavistock Institute, they are still available and can be obtained by writing to us. Global 2000 is working for a total belief system, an organization of beliefs which we Americans accept as truth of the country in which we live, verbal and nonverbal, implicit and explicit, conscious and unconscious. To put it in general terms, we believe that President Saddam Hussein was a monster who must be eliminated. We believe that Kuwait was a democracy we had to restore. We believe that Manuel Noriega is a dangerous criminal. We believe that women have the right to destroy their unborn infants. We believe that men whose minds were cesspools had the right to engage in filthy, vile sex practices. We believe that our military had the right to murder by burying alive 12,000 Iraqi soldiers. We believe we have the right to dispose of those world leaders who disagree with us. Finally, we shall also believe that excessive restrictions imposed on our lifestyle by environmentalism is right. We shall also believe that environmentalists have the right to destroy our industrial base and plunge millions into the icy cold waters of joblessness. We believe it is right to murder millions of people on a global scale because there are too many of them. When we get to this point of no return, we shall also believe it is right to live under the most evil dictatorship ever known to man. And worse yet, we will accept it. That is what Global 2000 teaches. This is the Global 2000 report. Let me hasten to assure you that all of the information contained in this report of mine has been taken from the works of H.G. Wells, Lord Bertrand Russell, Jeremy Bentham, and many, many others who have put together a frightening picture of what the world should be like by the year 2000. I have also written many other works on this particular subject, and I spent a great deal of time putting together the results of that work in various monographs. Much of what I have said is definitely verifiable. Of course, some of it cannot be verified, but that should not detract from the truth, because mass murder is seldom documented in advance, and the Global 2000 report is an advanced bulletin on mass murder, genocide on a global scale in terms of the Global 2000 report. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for listening.